accession number 22077, reel 12.
Harold Morris Metcalf, reel 12. Okay, so you've got a great percent, but some of the...
I finished my course, policemen didn't make the grade.
Right.
I wasn't surprised because they all thought they knew it. If you don't get me wrong, at that time, the civil policemen were not detectives, you know what I mean?
Right.
They had to learn it the same as we did, really. Yeah. And it was an intense course, don't get me wrong. We learned civil law, police, civil law, military law and all the rest of it, yeah. And forms and so on. I have it all upstairs, actually, all my courses. I was posted to a place called Newmarket. You may have heard about it. There's a lot of horses there. And when I arrived there, I was met by a military police sergeant who took me up. He said, I'll take you to the billet. Their quarters was... The Gables, Bury Road, Newmarket, was the house... right on the end of the town. And when I arrived there, he said, the sergeant major's not in yet, you'll have to wait for him. So I waited, and the sergeant major came in about 4 o'clock, and I said, been on the job, sir? And he said, oh no, I'll talk to you about that some other time. He used to swan about the city, he didn't do very much work. Anyway, the point was, Frank Swindles, his name was, and he'd been in one of these cavalry regiments, and he used to come in with his lovely breeches on and all black hood. And I've always remembered Frank. He was a funny devil. Anyway, he said, well, son, I don't know where you're going to live. I said, I beg your pardon. He said, you'll have to sleep here tonight. I haven't got a billet for you. I slept there that night and the next night, actually, on the floor in the bunk. It didn't matter to me. And he said, there's not much doing in Newmarket, you know. You won't live much here. What have you been doing? And I told him. And I remember it forcibly because he took me out the next day to two houses. And one lady said, no, I'm not letting any more to troops. That was it. Very nice lady. And then we went to a house near a church, Mrs. Buckle. And she and her husband were charming people. And young Derek, he was only a lad then, who I met in Korea years later. That's another story. But she said, yes, I would be pleased to have you. She said, I must tell you, though, that my husband is a baker, and he works all night. So I said to Tom, I said, that sounds a bit odd, Tom. And he said, oh, no, I trust you, of course. I was alone with her all the time I was there, every night. Tom was home about two times, but they were lovely people. They really were nice. And
what were your duties in Newmarket then?
Nothing. I'm sorry, don't get me wrong. My duties were when it came, if you know what I mean, and no inquiries came in. Then one night, I went to live with Olive and Tom, and I came into work one morning, and the sergeant major wasn't there. I waited for him, and then I had a call from the White House Hospital to tell me that Sergeant Major Swindles was there with a frozen face. He had taken the car out the night before, apparently, and come back from Newmarket, and it was a very cold night, and he couldn't talk. And when I went down to see him, he's trying to tell me that I got... I couldn't understand a word. I got back, and they hadn't had any crime in Newmarket for about 7 months. When I got back, the sergeant major and the military police said, I'm sorry, Corporal, he said, don't like to tell you this. There's three inquiries came in for you while you've been at the hospital. And I thought, oh, blimey, you know, there's no sergeant major, I'm on my own. I said, what is it? He said, well, one's very serious. It's a rape case. I said, and the others? He said, one is a larceny of a large amount of whiskey, Naffy property, and the other one, he said there's been some trouble elsewhere, which I'll tell you about, but you must do this rape case immediately. So I went down to the civil police station and picked up a civil police lady and brought her back to our office, took a statement from her, and she was quite distressed. She'd been to the hospital with this military civil police lady, and she came to a point, and I know this is strange, it's nothing to me now, but at that time it was quite a shock. And she was wonderful with her statement till she came to the actual point. And then she said, he took out his thing. And I said, I beg your pardon, seeing my instructor's face when he said exactly the same thing at the depot. They'll come to the point where they'll say, he took out his thing. You'll have to stop them then and say, excuse me, what did he take out? His fountain pen or his knife? Oh, no. And she'll tell you, or she won't tell you. You'll have to prompt her. I didn't know what to do. I'd never done a case in my life before. And the policewoman next to me, I could feel her laughing. You know what I mean? She wasn't really laughing, but she... And I said, I thought, what do I say? I said, do you know the word penis? She said, yes. I said, well, would you tell me what he took out? She said, what he took out is penis. I said, what happened then? Well, he laid me down on the ground and he pulled my knickers down and he put it inside me and he did all the things he shouldn't do. Well, who was it? I think he was an Italian prisoner of war, she said. And he was, actually. But the point was, I took the statement and I came outside. She was going to take this girl back home. And she took me back to the depot, to my billet at Gables. And I said, I'm sorry. I said, she said, don't worry. You must have had the ruddy same instructor as I had, because that's exactly the same words he used, you know. And I thought how funny it was. I told Frank later on when I met him in Bristol. And he was in hospital for over a week. I then had to go to the airport. It's gone out of my head for a moment. I don't know what I put it down here. He...
That would be the airport where? Near Newmarket?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The name's gone right out of my head, and I've been there so many times since I left the army, by the way. It'll come back to me. And when I got there... Apparently, well, not apparently, it was there. There was a huge store, and someone had broken in and stolen an awful lot of petrol in 8-gallon jerry cans. And I'm standing there looking. I'd gone up there in the section car, which was an old Morris. And suddenly a voice said, "Who are you?" And I looked over, and it was a police sergeant, you see. And he said, "Is this your car?" And I said, well, I came in it. He said, it's Frank Swindle's car, isn't it? Because he knew Frank, this bloke. And I said, yes, he's in hospital. What are you doing here then, cock? I was in civilian clothes. I said, well, I've come to investigate. There's been a larceny here overnight. And he came in and he said, well, what's think about it? I said, well, I really don't know. The place is empty. And I said, all I can see is a track of a vehicle here. And I'd like to take a print of that, if I can. He said, you hang on here, son. And he went away and got me some French chalk from the hospital, yes. And I've never forgotten it, because to set the plaster, there's only one way of doing it if you haven't got the right things, and that's to wee in it, you know what I mean? And the two of us weeing in this plaster to get it to mix quickly. We got a very good cast, yes. Put it in my car, and he said, well, good luck, cock. And I went back, and when I got too near to Newmarket, there was a hold-up. Well, there were an awful lot of hold-ups, because horses were kings. You had to stop. But there were no horses about. And then this bloke came up, and he said, excuse me, what are you doing in this car? I said, who are you? He said, I'm Detective Sergeant so-and-so. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. He said, it's Frank Swindles. I said, he's in hospital. And I told him who I was. I showed him my warrant card. He said, what's on then? I said, oh, I've been up to the airport. And I said, quite a lot of petrol stolen overnight. Thousands of gallons, I said. I said, what are you on? He said, oh, we're just checking vehicles as they go into the town. He said, there's only two army vehicles up there, by the way. So I said, oh, we'll have a look then. So I went up to this vehicle, a big 3-ton vehicle, all pulled down at the back. And I went to the chap and I said, hello, who are you? He said, I'm Sergeant so-and-so from so-and-so and so-and-so. And who are you? I said, oh, I'm Corporal Metcalf for the Special Investigation Branch. Where have you been? And he told me the name where he'd been. He actually said it, you see. And I said, oh, I suppose you were the bloke who stole all the petrol. And he said, yes. I'm not joking. It was just like falling off a log. And this police sergeant with me said, I don't believe it. Well, we opened the back and there was all the stuff. So that was that, yes? I went back to the barracks, to my the Gables, and I said, what's this other job? He said, well, apparently this whiskey, a truck of whiskey, come down from Scotland, and it should be going to the troops before they go over, and somewhere it's got lost on the way. A whole railway truckload. I actually phoned the headquarters, and they said, why are you doing this? And I told the captain, and he said, well, carry on, son. But when you go to Mark, Mark is the marshalling yards, and Mark used to be, our people, our Air Force used to go, they got very like one of the places in Germany where they had the bombs. So they, and I went there, and I met the station master, and he said, there's an old chap down there, and he'll put you right about this. And when I got down there, this old chap, he said, what's thee want? And I told him, you see, and he said, ah, it's never fine. Oh, by the way, he said, do you hear about the bloke who had his head cut off this morning? And I said, no, I'd had no breakfast, by the way. I went up there on my motorbike, by the way. And he said, well, he's better go and see that chap you've just been talking to. I went back to this fellow, and he said, oh, nothing to do with you. He said, but come and have a look. And I didn't know what to say, you know. I'd been in the war, but I'd not seen anything like this sort of thing. And I thought, well, it won't matter. Train went over him, it must be as clean as a whistle. But his neck had been stretched, you know, and it was horrible. I'm not joking, and I could have been sick, but I had no food. So anyway, we went down this truck. He said, well, there's only one lot standing here for a while, he said. And they all had tear cards on with what they had in the truck. And one of them didn't have a tear card on, yes? And I said, what's in here? He said, I don't know. They just comes in here, and I just walked something down, because that's what he was, a real country yokel. Being wartime, anybody was doing these things. I said, well, can I have this opened? He said, oh, no. So we had to go back to the Ruddy station and phone up. Eventually we opened it, and there was all this whiskey. No, I'm not joking. When I phoned the captain, he said, it's like falling down a bloody sewer and coming out covered in pearls, Metcalf. You know, I'd never done an inquiry in my life. Three positive results straight away. Well, they called me Dick Barton for a long time after that, but that was how it all started. I never had another inquiry while I was in Oregon.
What rank were you now?
A Lance Corporal. Yeah, we were all Lance Corporals till I was made a Corporal shortly afterwards. And Sergeant, shortly, we all had to be Sergeants in the SIB, so it was a very rapid promotion time. In fact, when I went over to Germany shortly after, I was a Sergeant, so that's how quick it was. We stayed at the depot for a while, and I was a bit upset because we should have... I was a company clerk at the time, and I used to do all the things, all the entries had to be sent to 21 Army Group in Germany. And I was back at the depot, you know, at Aldershot.
Right.
So I wasn't very pleased. And then the war came to the end on the 8th of May. Yes? Mm-hmm. That was my wedding anniversary. And that's the day my daughter died, you see, when we were in Hong Kong. So it's always been one of those days for us, bittersweet. But I always remember this because I was so niggled that we hadn't got to Germany before the war finished. I'd been at the depot for 6 weeks waiting about. And they had a sports day, and I won nearly all the events. And all I got was about 10 shillings worth of blue lights that you could go to the canteen and buy something with. Anyway, shortly after, we went over to Germany. And, no, we went up north to get our vehicles. And being the company clerk at the time, the captain said to me, I think you better get no Jeep for you. You better get something that's going to be covered in so that you can keep things clean and tidy and damp-proof. It was pouring with rain. We got up there. They all got their Jeeps. I didn't want a 1,500 weight, but when I got in, it was all covered in. So the captain and the lieutenant came with me, actually. And we went down to Grays, and we sailed from Grays.
Grays in Essex.
Yeah, in Essex.
What did you sail on? Do you know?
LCT, I think it was. A landing craft troops, I think. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a ship, anyway, you know. It wasn't a boat.
And And where did you land?
We landed at straight across, not Cali, Boulogne.
In France, anyway.
Yes. 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 I'm sorry, I can't remember now. I know where we were going.
Yeah.
And we got off. We had our rations given to us before we got off the ship, a day's rations, because we were going up to Bad Oeynhausen. It was a long, long way in Germany. We knew nothing about it. The captain had all the directions. We came very early in the morning to a place called Munster, and there was nothing there, literally. It was, honestly, it was up, very upsetting. Don't get me wrong. I know there'd been a war on, but there was hardly any buildings standing. And there was nobody about. Then suddenly people started coming out the ground. There's cellars all over Germany, of course. Every house got cellars. And these kids came up to us. And, of course, there was no fraternization at all. Montgomery was very strict about this. You were not allowed to speak to anyone German. Not anything.
What sort of date was it you went across to France?
One-five-three Bravo Company, 87 section.
You were in 153 Bravo Company.
Yeah. That was our company we were attached to at the time.
Right.
Yeah. The security section. 73. 14th of June, I would think.
Right. Oh, right. Very soon after D-Day.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, we weren't very pleased about it, of course, but there you go. We went, and that particular morning, these children came up, and they wanted food. So the sergeant who was with us gave his rations, and we all gave our rations to the kids. That was that. A little later on, the captain and the lieutenant came back and said, we'll have a brew up here. There's a deathless hush in the close tonight again. And everybody's looking at everybody else and said, we're sorry, sir, we haven't any rations left. And I could see straight away by the looks on their faces. I said, we gave it to the children. He said, well, you'll be bloody hungry till you get the Bad Oeynhausen, because we gave ours as well. Now, I've never forgotten it, because I knew straight away this was going to be the tenure of the thing all the way through.
So well, it had that effect on everybody, didn't it?
I think most of the troops were, it was everybody, the kids. It was heart-rending, it was really. Not only with the kids, with some people, but that we were not, it was forbidden to speak to Germans at all, which wasn't very nice. Till we got to the Kaiserhof Hotel in bad Salzuflen, and we kipped down there. We'd been travelling all day, and I remember one of the sergeants, I forgot he was a Scot, and he didn't go to bed. We all went to bed, but he didn't, and the next morning, he said, anybody got any fags? I said, well, where's your ration? He said, I gave it to a girl yesterday. I said, what do you mean you gave it? He said, well, she wanted to sleep with me, and she offered me for cigarettes. So he said, we had a good night together. This was my introduction to Germany. We went on to Bad Oeynhausen, which was headquarters, Colonel Thrift.
Yeah, can you spell that for me, Bad?
Oeynhausen, Oeynhausen. Oeynhausen.
That was the
army headquarters at the time. Army headquarters. And from there we were posted. And I was posted with young Sergeant Head, who we'd been on the course together, non-civil policeman. And we were posted to this section in a place called Eindhoven. We've got a very good football team now. But Eindhoven was the huge Phillips factory, if you probably remember, and it had been taken over by the military, and we had tanks and guns and all the accoutrements of war stored there. and it was quite a place to be guarded, actually. I didn't stay long in Eindhoven, but I learned quite a few things about people, because when I arrived there, the captain said to me, "Hello, Mussels, what the hell are you doing here?" Because I'd been a PT instructor, and I still had my stripes up, my cross swords. And he said, "We don't do PT here, you know." I said, "No, I'm one of the section." And he said, "What do you mean?" And I told him, they were all civil policemen, you see, and they couldn't believe this. But at that time, the civil police were wanting their men back. You know, the war was over. And there were an awful lot of civil police in the SIB at that time. So I stayed there only a few weeks, I think, and then I was posted to a place called Rotterdam. And I'm trying to think when I went there, actually.
Can I just ask you a couple of questions?
Yes, please.
I mean, obviously, you went into Germany in 1945.
Yeah.
Was this right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, there was no sort of infrastructure. There was no
nothing.
Law and order apart from the occupying forces.
Nothing.
I suppose. Yeah.
It's all according to what you say. I think almost immediately, burgomasters were set up to look after the stadt or the town, wherever they were, and they also had a German police force formed. They must have done, because when I went later, the civil police were under my charge, actually, when I went later, when I went into other places. But when we were in Holland, when I went to Rotterdam, it was tragic. I don't know how to put this, but the Germans had been pretty callous in Rotterdam. They shot kids on the side of the road, and there were little bunches of flowers all over the place, you know. And when I asked about it, it upset me, of course, and I'm a pretty sentimental bloody old fool, but it upset me a lot because there were so many of these. And then we heard the stories about these German folk. And there was a barracks there. And inside the barracks, there were a lot of German prisoners of war. And there was a whole battalion of British infantry around this barracks. Not to stop the Germans getting out, my dear, but to stop the Dutch people getting in. They'd have killed the bloody lot. I'm not joking. They hate them. They still hate them now, by the way. We have good friends in Holland and in Germany, but that's another story, isn't it? It was tragic. It really was tragic. And
I rather imagine that, you know, in Eindhoven, perhaps, you know, because everything had been so much up in the air, that this was just the chance that every petty criminal and black marketeer was waiting for.
All over the place. Mm. I didn't do any jobs in Eindhoven, fortunately, but they used to go to Nordplein. There was a place called Nordplein, like the city centre. Every night they were bringing back fags to the section, you know, and we'd give them to the hospitals, and the next day it was exactly the same. In fact, another story many years later on while I was in Rotterdam, but the only time I was ever a rogue, that was. But Rotterdam was quite different. We had quite a lot of inquiries in Rotterdam, and we went to the Hook of Holland and the Hague and all that sort of thing. My section headquarters were actually in the Hague, and I was on detachment, and I had a lovely sergeant major there, and two sergeants. There were four of us all together, and Captain Jones, a Welshman, very fond of his music, was Captain Jones, Tom, and When I arrived there, he said, "Do you still play sport, Metcalf?" I said, "Well, yes, when I get the chance." He said, "You play tennis?" I said, "Well, I do when I get a chance." He said, "Well, I do as well, but we've not been able to do anything about it." I said, "Well, why don't we go to the YMCA and find out what we can do?" I'd only been there 2 days. So we went to the YMCA, and there was a lady there, actually. It was more YW people, actually, but it was the YM. In Rotterdam, and I said, "Well, we'd like to play tennis if it's possible." Oh, yes, we know where you can go. There's a huge tennis court by the Blydorp, that's the zoo, and it belongs to a man called Brosoft Verhulst, and he lives at such and such a place. So we went back, and it was only the two streets from us around the corner where we were, and Schapenstraat. And we went round there, and I don't know whether you know, but in Holland, there the flats have mirrors that can see people down below, if you know, so that they know who's coming. So we pressed the bell of this house, and a lady looked out and said, "Ja?" And I said, "Is Herr?" And I tried to get his name out. You see, Verhulst? Nein. I didn't know what to do. And she said, "Was wollen Sie?" Or in Dutch, she asked me what I wanted. Said, tennis. Ach, ja. Come up. She opened the door like they do up, you know, and the door. We went upstairs, and at that moment, another lady came in. Oh, what a charming woman she was. Anki Bershoft. And I explained to her, she didn't speak much English, and I tried. Oh, and then in came this young lady, and she said, "Hello, who are you?" And we were in uniform, actually, my captain and I, and we told her. And she said, what do you want?" And I said, "Is your father at home?" She said, "Oh, no, my father does not live here. My mummy and daddy divorce, yes?" So that was that. That was the introduction we had. I said, "There's this big grand piano in the corner, music all over the place." And she said, "What did you want?" I said, "We wanted to play tennis." She said, "Well, you'll have to see my dad." And I had just learned a song called "O Maiden, My Maiden" in German. I just learned it. And I said to the lady, "You play?" And she said, "Oh, yes, ja. Ich spiele auch." And she went to play. And she said, "You like music?" I said, "I sing." "Ah, what you sing?" And I said, "My heart's delight?" "Ja. Dein is mein ganzes Herz." And before I finished, she got up and she hugged me. And she said, "Oh, wunderbar." And her daughter said, "She thinks you're lovely." I said, "Well, I am, you know." And I couldn't get over this. And my boss was tickled to death. And she said, "You come my house tonight. We have music." And Tom Jones came in. His name was Tom Jones, not him, but that was his name, Captain Jones. And, well, they were wonderful to us. They really were. We took food as well, by the way. But I met her husband, and he was very pleased to let us use the tennis courts, which we did. And in the winter, they used to pour water on it at night, and it would freeze because they were all sealed off, you know what I mean? And we used to skate on them. I never paid anything when I was up there. And Anki Bershoft, she was the directress of the Netherlands State Opera. And I sang with them whilst I was up in Rotterdam. I used to go training with them. Hank Noord, Tom Trist, Maurice and Marie, they all sang on the radio. Oh, they were lovely people. And I really had a good training with them. Yes. And I did a concert at Christmas, the first thing we'd ever done, in the zoo. And they asked me if I would go, and I did. And I sang some songs. And one I sang, it was a song that some Belgian had written about the war and about the British troops, which went down very well. I've got a copy upstairs. But I've forgotten the song I sang, but they were all in tears, and I was in tears as well. And it really was a lovely, lovely time. And then I sang at a big concert in the City Hall, and I had no clothes to wear. And I remember going with Anki to various people to get an evening dress suit. Oh, there's a picture of us in there, actually. And it was a lovely concert. They really were lovely to us. And I think we did them proud, because there was always fags and things. We always took food and hooch and things. We always had plenty of stuff we could let them have.
Because the Dutch had been occupied for so long, hadn't they?
Oh, yes. They'd had an awful time. Mm. They had an awful time. Mm. And my...
starting to be able to come out of it.
That's right, yeah, that's right. Well, it was quite a while before they did, really. I think they were bludgeoned in, they were really right down the bottom of the pit, I think, most people. And can I tell you, they hated the Germans, and they still do. There were so many terrible things done, and I'm not surprised, really. Having said that...
Stop you there. Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel 12.